be the best you can be for yourself. You want to be the best salesperson in the world? First, you better be the best person in the world. You want to be the best dad or the best mom? First, you must be the best person you can be for yourself. When you achieve best for yourself, then and only then can you be your best for others. I know it has a selfish twinge to it, but if you think about it long enough, you're going to come to realize that your shortcomings in all of your endeavors stem from the fact you're not being the best person you can be first. Principle 2, prepare to win or lose to someone who is. Inside this principle, we're going to talk about be prepared, the Boy Scout motto for more than 100 years, and the best ways to find information about a prospect. The red bites will include do your homework, are you a winner or a whiner, the workday starts the night before, and work while others sleep. Only 5% of you will do this. The rest of you are watching TV. Hey, raise your hand if you're making money watching TV. Just asking. Be prepared. The Boy Scout motto for more than 100 years. What do you need to know about the prospect's business to engage them? I mean, if you just walk in the door and say, hey, tell me a little bit about your business, how unprepared does that make you look? Answer, totally unprepared. Prepared is going to their website and printing out several strategic pages, reading them, and making notes so you can ask about what you don't understand or need elaboration on, not ask them from total ignorance. Here's a note. Just so we understand each other, tell me a little bit about your business is the third dumbest thing you can say to or ask a prospect. The second is, let me tell you a little bit about my business. Prospects could care less about you or your business and probably already knows enough to not want to hear it again. The first dumbest, I'll tell you later. Let's talk about where to find out information about a prospect and his or her business before your sales call. Let me give you an incomplete list of resources. If you have one that I missed, email it to salesman@getimmer.com and get your name up in lights on Sales Caffeine and win a Sales Caffeine mug. Coffee is for closers, if I haven't received it before. Let me give you a clue. I've received a ton of them, but give it a shot. Number one is obviously the internet. Don't just look up their site. Enter their company name on Google or other multiple search engines like Dogpile or MSN or Yahoo and see what pops up. There may be an article or other important information. Then enter the name of the person that you're meeting with. Then enter the name of their CEO. Then tell me why you're not meeting with the CEO. There's a little poke there. Oh, by the way, if you're looking up the name of the person you're meeting with and you find nothing, that tells you something. The second thing is to look at their literature. Even though it's wee-wee, we do this, we do that, wee-wee, it has the basic brags covered and may talk about shifts in emphasis and market coverage. It also tells you what they think of themselves and their products or their services. Number three is their vendors. Usually reluctant talkers, but they can tell you what it's like to do business with them and all about how you're going to get paid. Valuable information, to say the least. Vendors are a rarely used resource. Number four, their competition. Oh man, talk about dirt, here it is. Just ask casual questions about how they win business. It will tell you what it will be like to negotiate with them. And by the way, the more their competition hates them, the better they usually are. Competitors hate the people who take business away from them. Number five, their customers. Customers talk, and they're the real word on delivery, organization, quality, and the subtle information that can give you an insightful competitive advantage. Number six, the people in your network who may know them. A quick email to your inside group. You don't have an inside group? A quick email to your inside group asking for information will always net you a fact or two and may just be the bonanza that you were looking for. Number seven, there are other employees. Occasionally the admin person will help, but don't count on that. A better bet is their PR department or their marketing department. Number 8, the best and least used resource to find out information about anything is their sales department. Salespeople will tell you anything. You can get details you won't believe. And number 8.5 is, when you're done all this research, Google yourself. You want some pain? Look up your own name. Where are you? What's your internet position? Suppose they're looking you up. What will they find? If it's nothing, that's a report card on you. And it's not just an internet preparation. It's other research like finding mutual friends, calling a few vendors, maybe a few customers, getting vital information as it relates to the buying of your product or your service. One more thing in preparation. Be prepared with an objective or two about what you want to accomplish in the meeting. Proper preparation takes time, but I assure you, it's impressive to the prospect. He or she knows that you've prepared and is silently impressed. It's an advantage that very few salespeople use. Salespeople make the fatal error of getting ready with all their own stuff. PowerPoint slides, samples, literature, business cards, you know, the same thing the competition is doing. It's the biggest mistake in sales, and almost every salesperson makes it. And it's not only preparation about the sale, it's your personal preparation for sales, your personal training. How ready are you? Get ready, baby. Turn off the TV and get ready. Now, if you want a list of places you can gather information, sure you do. Go to Gittimer.com, register if you're a first-time user, enter the word research in the red bit box. RedByte, do your homework. Your parents nagged you for more than a decade. Either an order, do your homework, or the question you hated to hear the most, did you do your homework yet? You hated it. I hated it. Everyone hated it. It may have been your introduction to lying. What they didn't tell you is that homework doesn't stop when you graduate from school. Rather, school homework is training groundwork for career homework and life homework. In order to become a success at sales or at life, the first thing you have to master is homework. Getting ready, preparing, developing questions, creating ideas, and every other facet of your sales life presupposes that you've done your homework. And so, in the words of your mother, I ask you for all time, have you done your homework yet? RedByte, are you a winner or a whiner? I'm against whining. Whiners are avoided. Whiners are never listened to. Whiners are never respected. And in general, nobody likes or wants to hang around with a whiner. The exception being other whiners. Misery loves company. In my first book, The Sales Bible, I put a quote in there that said, you can't be a winner if you're a whiner, wiener. At the time, I thought it was pretty funny. But over the years, I found that it's not only funny, it's 100% accurate. Think for a moment about how you bring your problems to others. Think for a moment about what you say when something doesn't go your way. Think for a moment about how you react when you lose a big sale. If any of those reactions or responses contain whining, cut it out, or you'll become a wiener. Whiner. RedByte. The workday starts the night before. My friend Scott Crawford and I had breakfast the other day at Einstein's, and we started talking about philosophy, about sales and business, and out of the blue, he drops this gem. He said, my grandfather always told me, Scott, the workday starts the night before. I ran to get a napkin so I could write it down. I asked Scott to tell me more, and he did. It was about preparing. It was about getting ready for the next day. I can inflict major pain on you right now by asking you, what is it that you do to get ready for your next sales day? Your answer is somewhere between drinking, watching sporting events, watching TV reruns, or nothing. How pathetic is that? Well, actually, some people don't consider that pathetic. They would be your competition. RedByte. Work while others sleep. I wake up early every day. I run to my computer, I begin to write. I've been doing that for 15 years. So far, the net is 7 books, 800 columns, not to mention 1,800 presentations to companies all over the world. I'm up early. Before you get up in the morning, I'm already making money. Now, I usually stay up until 12 or 1 o'clock. And from 11 until 1, things are quiet. Like anybody, sometimes I fiddle on the internet. Yeah, I'm an eBay addict, but I also surf around the clients' websites just to see what's going on, to see if I can learn anything new, and to see if I can come up with any ideas. Now, I've only been doing this for 5 or 6 years. The point is, I take those extra 3 or 4 hours a day, and I earn more in that time when most people are asleep than they do when they're awake. Principle 3. Personal branding is sales. It's not who you know, it's who knows you. In this principle, we're going to discuss brand me. The red bites will include build your personal brand and customers will call you, build your personal brand and customers will be loyal. We're going to talk about position more, compete less, who sees you, who appoints you, it depends on who knows you, and who values you and your knowledge. Here's brand me. Execution for results. Personal branding is not complicated, unless you take a course in it. Then it's scary as hell. Entrepreneurial personal branding and marketing is much easier. I have a brand. Or should I say, I am the brand. I've taken my name, Gittimer, and Jeffrey Gittimer, and turned it into my brand. My column has been in business journals for more than 15 years. It's now in 95 markets. My website is my name, Gittimer.com. My company is my name, By Gittimer. And everything I do has my name on it. I even registered URLs for the misspellings of my name and pointed to my website. What's your brand? Not just your company brand. I'm talking about your personal brand. In sales, prospects buy the salesperson first. If they buy brand you, then they may buy what you're selling. How do you get a brand? How do you create a brand? Well, the first thing you have to do is, if you're a small business person, don't read a book on it. I've yet to find one that's pragmatic enough to work. Second, think me and give to get. Third, think promotion combined with advertising. And the kicker, it's how hard you work, how smart you work, and how dedicated you are combined with your self-belief that will help your brand proliferate more than anything. Personal branding is creating a demand for your product or service indirectly through means other than direct advertising. Personal branding is get the business community to have confidence in you as a respected, high-caliber individual. Personal branding is getting the business community to have confidence in your business, earning a reputation for quality performance, so good that it's talked about. Personal brand and personal branding is establishing yourself as an expert. Why just be in the field when you can be perceived as on top of the field? Be seen and known as a leader. Stand in front of the group. Tell them to get involved, and you get involved in some kind of small group and lead them. Show up where everybody is all the time. Personal branding is being known as an innovator, being known as a person or a business of value, being known as a resource, separating yourself from the competition. Get in front of the pack. Set the standard. Personal branding is gaining professional stature. Your image is determined by others. Your outreach determines your image. Build your image and the image of your business. That's what personal branding is all about. By being a consistent, positive performer, by associating with quality things and people, by delivering what you promise. Get talked about in a positive way. As a result of your total branding and marketing outreach, make your phone ring with qualified prospects, and then it's your job to convert them to sales. So right now you're screaming, "Hey, Jeffrey, get specific." Okay. Here's some branding information you won't find in any textbook. It's the actions that I've taken for the past 15 years to build my brand. I cannot guarantee that they will work for you, but they do work. I can tell you that firsthand, they have worked for me. So here's my personal formula for developing a personal brand. Number one, registeryourname.com now. You can go to tons of websites. Obtainyourname.com is the one that I've used. Or go to some name registration site and register your name as fast as you can. Register your kids' names too. The next thing you have to do is be willing to give of yourself first. It's not the only way, but it's the best and most long-lasting one that I found. Then you have to dedicate the time to make it happen, or it will not happen. If you want to make a lasting mark, it must be preceded with a master plan and a dedication of time. Next thing you need to do is get other people to help you. List the people that you think can help you or help you connect. Ask for their support. You want to know the easiest way to get support? Give it first, without keeping score. The next thing I did was make a brief 30-second commercial about what I could do for other people and how I could help other people. The secret is to deliver it after you've asked the other person what they do. One of the things that I did specifically was combine outreaches. For example, I got my charity to get into the community and make me a spokesperson. You got it? Donate a scholarship to a trade association of your best client. Give a talk and donate the speaking fee to your charity. What I did was make donations in honor of significant events, maybe even in a customer's life. Do everything with some kind of creative flair. Look at my shirt. It's a work shirt. You know why? I'm a worker. Something that makes the time and the effort that you gave worth remembering. Memorability is a vital link to building market awareness. But here's a secret. Get the best business card money can buy. It's your image. And makes an impact every time you give one, either wow, positive, mediocre, or negative. Engrave it, blind emboss it, foil stamp it, logo it, graphic design it, multicolor it, make it best. Here's the acid test. When you give out your card, if somebody doesn't look at your card and you go, nice card, get it redone. Every corporate, buy your own. What I did was stay in front of the people that I want to do business with. And that's what you need to do too. By combining your outreaches, you can create a steady flow of your images in the paper, a weekly email magazine like mine, Sales Caffeine, maybe even on television or your monthly newsletter. But go to your target market. It takes between 5 and 10 images to create awareness enough to make a buying decision. In that process, one of the keys is to become a resource. It's much more powerful than someone perceiving you as a salesperson or even an entrepreneur. People will want to be with you, want to hang around with you, and pay attention to what you say if they believe that what you say and do has value to them and their business. And then it's just about persistence and consistency. Those are secrets. Don't do anything once and then sit back and wait. You got to keep plugging at it without expectation. If you're good, you got to have patience. Your phone will ring, I promise you. One more last kind of piece of information. Have a good time doing it. People who take it too serious have problems sorting out what's important in the world. Treat it like an important game. Play as hard as you can to win. Strive to be your best at whatever you do. Go for the personal goal of being the best, not the material goal of having a new house. And then you got to make a lot of money. Be the best, and the money will automatically show up. But there's a key. People will think you're nuts. So my advice is ignore idiots and zealots. There's a lot of jealous people out there and naysayers in the world. Ignore them. People will try to rain on your parade because they have no parade of their own. You need to become known as a person of action. The result of these actions will be a person who is known for getting things done, a leader. It's not just a reflection on you, it's a reflection on your company, the products and services you offer, and it's your personal brand. It's something you can't place a value on or buy, but it's the difference between sale and no sale. And it's the difference between having to sell and people wanting to buy. People don't like to be sold, but they love to buy. The result of these actions will be a brand new you. Red Byte. Build your personal brand and customers will call you. Build your personal brand and customers will be loyal. The law of attraction is created by your brand. Let me use myself as an example. My brand gets me in your door. I write my column every week. It's all over the newspapers. I have a weekly email magazine, Sales Caffeine, that delivers valuable sales information to more than 250,000 people every week. From those two extensions of my brand, I receive not less than 100,000 web hits a month. If you look at the way I've established the brand over the years, you'll see that I fight for the brand's integrity. I didn't say I'm pristine. I didn't say I'm politically correct. I didn't say I'm not on the edge, sometimes over the edge, but that's my persona. The integrity of my brand is the consistency and the value of the message. I become known as the sales guy, all because I brand myself with information that others can use to make more sales and build their business. It's important to note that in the 15 years I've been writing my column, I've never made a sales call to book a seminar. They call me first because they know me, and they know I provided them with valuable information. Every branding book talks about getting the customer to remember your name at the time they're ready to purchase. And while that's a correct statement, it speaks nothing of the critical aspect. Will they buy from you? And will they buy from you is all about their perception of the value of your brand. That's what creates the law of attraction. Red Byte. Position more, compete less. My article appears in more than 90 cities around the country. Am I the best salesperson in cities like Dallas, St. Louis, or Atlanta? It doesn't matter. I'm the best positioned salesperson in those cities. My picture's in the paper, my competition reads my column every week and hates my guts. I'm better positioned in their city than they are. They live there, I don't. My position gives me a competitive selling edge. People already know me. The rule of sales that applies in this situation is, in sales, it's not who you know. In sales, it's who knows you. Positioning helps you get known. Red Byte. Who sees you? Who appoints you? It depends on who knows you. One of the other aspects of positioning is how high up the ladder you can get when you actually make an appointment. Because of the status I have, or better stated, the market positioning I have, I'm always able to meet with the company's leader. Sometimes it's the CEO, sometimes it's the owner, but it's always the person who, quote, runs the place. This gives me an incredible competitive advantage. In that, number one, they already know me, so I don't have to build credibility when I walk in the door. And number two, they're always the decision maker. If you're meeting with a CEO that already knows and respects you, I can promise you one thing. A lot of yeses are going to come your way. Red Byte. Who values you and your knowledge? Most salespeople stop at the end of the selling process. They go through the same old time-worn crapola of prospect, appoint, present, close, follow-up, barf. That sales strategy will lead you no place but maybe to another sales job. If you want to build a relationship, if you want to get referrals, you have to become known as an expert or the expert in whatever it is that you do. This, however, requires hard work and study on your part. If you're not willing to do that, my immediate recommendation is run down to the post office real fast and get yourself a nice safe job down there. Selling stamps. If your customers value the knowledge and the expertise that you've delivered to them, they will think long and hard before they entertain the dregs of humanity who also sell your product. Oh, you may know them as your competitors. In sales, it's not who you know. In sales, it's who knows you. Principle 4. It's all about value. It's all about relationship. It's not all about price. Here's what you're going to learn. The 6.5 principles of giving value and being valuable. Free speech. Price versus value, the real way to beat the price objection. And here are the Red Bytes. Give value first, don't add it. Make friends before you start, or don't start. Act professionally, talk friendly. And sales for the moment, friends for life. Sales for the commission, value for the fortune. So, where's the value in the sales equation? What role does value play in making sales? What role does value play in building customer loyalty? And how does value help build solid business relationships? The word value has a difficult time being defined and understood. Giving value and adding value are words that many salespeople and sales executives have a difficult time in understanding, let alone providing. Most people think that value is all about something that the company adds on, some small additional service, something tacked onto a product, maybe even a slight reduction in price, even something free. Wrong. These are promotions, not values. Value is something done for the customer in favor of the customer. In my case, I found that it's most effective to give value first and give it without expectation. And give it often, and give it without expectation, and give it to your best prospects. And did I mention give it without expectation? I give value through my weekly column and my weekly email magazine, Sales Caffeine. People call me out of the blue and thank me for my information, and then they hire me, and then they pay me. My mantra is simple. I put myself in front of people who can say yes to me, and I deliver value first. Make it your mantra. Let me give you the 6.5 principles of giving value and being valuable. Number one, market with stuff and information about prospects and customers, not about you. They will never read your brochure. In fact, they'll probably throw it away. Send them information about how they profit, how they produce, or how they succeed, and they will devour every word. In fact, they'll keep it for years. Number two, write good stuff in journals, newspapers, e-zines, and newsletters. Writing creates a perceived leadership position. Your picture's in print, your name is in print, and is a value positioning statement at the same time. It also allows those who agree with your ideas or philosophy to connect with you. Number three, create response vehicles or mechanisms in everything that you write. You see, if they agree with you and they want more, offer it. It's a great way to connect with business. Lack of response is also a report card. Number four, earn your way onto a broadcast media, any broadcast media possible. Try to get on a talk show with information that everybody can use. Tie your expertise to a timely topic or holiday. Now, obviously, you can get on a talk show by calling in, but what you want to be is a guest. When you're a guest on a talk show, you're an authority. Number five, get known as a person of value. Get known and get business to come to you. Leading a group or a committee at a chamber or a charity or volunteerism. Pick one that you really like. Number six, send your stuff after they ask for it, and make sure that it has something that they will keep. Proactive mailings rarely work. It's like 0.5% if you're lucky. If you really want to test the viability of your information, offer it and see who wants it. I send nothing until someone calls and asks for it. But you have to note well, what's the value of your brochure? If it's stated in terms of you, you could put the words up yours anywhere in the middle of your brochure and no one would ever find it. Number 6.5, speak in public. Now, you can cold call or you can speak in public. I say speak. Why? How? Stay tuned. Free speech, the legacy you leave to yourself. You want 50 new leads a week? Sure you do. Give a free speech at a civic group. Many salespeople looking to emerge are frantically trying to market themselves from brochures, direct mail, cold calling, even networking. Expensive frustration. The best way to market yourself is give yourself to the market. Expose yourself to your prospects. My advice is free speech, or to put it a clearer way, speak for free. Free speech pays, big pay, and free speech has rewards, big rewards. Now, note well, I said speech, not sales pitch. When you show up at a civic organization to deliver a free 15 to 20 minute talk, here's the gold that you'll receive. You get to give a live sales presentation to sell yourself, not your product or your service. You get to do an audition right in front of a decision maker. You build and strengthen your network. You establish or even reestablish your presence. You help in the community. You build your speaking skills, your presentation skills, and your storytelling skills. You get to try out new material. You'll attract new customers, all leaders. Now, if you're just starting out in your business, you'll have a great opportunity to move up the ladder and get to know other people. You get a chance to have meaningful impact on someone through your words. And obviously, you eat for free. Now, to some of those rewards that I just talked about, you may want to add the prefix phrase, if you're great. To get the real meaning and make the most impact, you have to make the message clear, but you have to be a great presenter. Interested in making a free speech? It's simple. Contact any civic organization in your city. They're dying for a good talk. Every week they're looking for a good speakers. You may be one. It sure beats cold calling. The best strategy for the approach, let me give you the 6.5 success tactics of free speech. Number one, don't give a sales pitch, but do speak on your topic. Speak about interesting stuff to the audience that teases your stuff, but give a great speech. For example, if you sell burglar alarms, speak about home safety. If you sell copiers, speak about image and productivity. You get it? Number two, pick a great audience. There's groups and there's groups. Pick the best ones, highest profile, most likely to have bigwigs. Number three, give a handout, even if it's just a few pages. A handout will help the audience follow along, and it precludes you from having to memorize the talk. Gives every member of the audience a way to contact you, but warning, give out the handout when you start to use it, never before you begin. If you give the handout out before you start, people read one thing while you're speaking about another, or worse, you lose audience control and the impact of your message. Number four has nothing to do with the speech, it's after speech. Videotape it. After the talk, you can play the video at home and see how good you really are, as opposed to how good you think you are. Number five, ask for audience evaluations. Read about your impact, if any. Number six, give value, get leads. At the end of your talk, offer something additional for free in exchange for their card. The cards you get are also known as leads. Anyone you call will answer your call after you give a great speech. And 6.5, hang around after the meeting. That's when you find out what your impact was and who your best prospects are. Warning, don't sell your stuff at the meeting. Make a lunch appointment or a breakfast meeting and avoid making a sales pitch or bragging about your company during their meeting. On a personal note, this is how I got started getting paid to speak. From my weekly column in the paper, several Rotary and Kiwanis clubs in town called me to give a talk. I decided not to talk about sales, my expertise. Rather, I spoke about children, my favorite topic, and titled my talk, What We've Learned from Our Kids. I selected seven skills that my kids had helped me strengthen in the rearing process, like imagination, persistence, blind faith, enthusiasm, and I told a brief story about each one. In 20 minutes, I made the audience laugh, cry, think, and learn. I had a handout and also offered the seven best parenting rules I'd ever learned for free if they would just give me their card. At the end of every meeting, I always had at least 50 cards and one paid talk from somebody who said, "How'd you like to come to speak to my employees?" So my rewards and yours for giving a free 20-minute talk included a live audience, a sales call in front of 100 decision makers, audience impact, new friends, a self-taught lesson, a practice session, a free lunch, a pen, their usual gift for the talk, a certificate of thanks from my group, 50 warm leads, and a paid engagement. beats direct mail or cold calling. Here's a bonus tip. Any group will pay you $100 if you have them make the checkout to your favorite charity in your name and theirs. No matter who you are, no matter where you are in your sales career, free speech can impact learning and earning. Free speech isn't just a right, it's an opportunity. Exercise yours. Now, if you'd like a free red bit, a few more presentation tips, tips on how to give a better speech and a better sales presentation, go to Gittimer.com, register if you're a first-time user, and enter the word presentation in the red bit box. Price versus value. The real way to beat the price objection. Customer says, how much is it? You know what your answer is? Doesn't matter if the value is there. Let me make it real simple. Draw a line down the middle of a flip chart page. On one side, put up price too high and take the lowest bid. On the other side of the page, I want you to tell me what your customer wants. No, not your product. What your customer really wants, because it may have nothing to do with your product or your service. What do customers want? Well, your customers want more sales, greater productivity, more profit, better image, more customers, loyal employees, better morale, no hassles, more free time, notoriety. You got it? If you're able to get him or her one of those significant items, then how significant is price? You see, the more value you provide, the less price matters. The classic example of price versus perceived value is in the automobile business. You've seen every ad from every dealer that sells a car a dollar over invoice or at invoice or below invoice. No value. Certainly no perceived value. What happens after I take ownership? How will I value from the use of my purchase? What kind of service can I expect? If one of them would place a full-page ad in the paper that says, our prices are guaranteed to be $100 more than anybody else's price, but our service is guaranteed to be 100% better than anybody else's service. And underneath that are pictures of five customers telling you in one form or another why they paid the extra $100 and that the service is phenomenal, they would have all the business. I promise you, nobody remembers the price at 7 o'clock in the morning when you're waiting online at the car dealership for service and you don't get taken until 7:30 and the service person is somewhat rude and they have no loaner car so somebody else has to drive you there and pick you up from work. And when you get back at 5 o'clock to pick your car up and wait another 20 minutes, you come to find out they didn't have the part to fix what was broken and you got to come back again next week. But you're the smartest guy in the world. You saved $100 on the car. And at that moment, you would have paid an extra $1,000 for the car. Here's the lost opportunity. The salesperson is concentrating on making the best deal and going through every sales hoodwinking gyration, neglecting to talk about what it would be like to have the car serviced. When there's no value, all that's left is price. Now, I use the car dealer example because every one of you has had it happen to you in one form or another. What you need to do now is figure out where your value proposition lies and how to communicate it in a way that the customer will get it and be so compelling in your message, in your proof statements or your testimonials, that the customer will both emotionally and logically make the decision to buy from you. Understand this. The sale is emotionally driven and emotionally decided, but then it is justified logically. The head is attached to the price. The heart is attached to the wallet. You jerk on the heartstrings and the wallet comes popping right out of that back pocket. Here's what you need to do to start. Number one, stop thinking of your product as a commodity. If you tell yourself you're selling a commodity, you're doomed to selling price. Wireless phone, commodity, not. Office supplies, commodity, not. Computer hardware, commodity, not. It's all about the relationship. It's all about the perceived value. Let's get one thing straight before we go any further. Not everybody's going to buy value. 30 to 40% of all customers will buy price. That's the bad news. The good news is that 60 to 70% of all customers will buy value if you provide it to them. Keep in mind, lowest price is lowest profit. Every time you take a nickel off the top line price, you subtract that same nickel right out of profit. And here's the reality about people who buy price only. Cheap bastards are also a pain in the ass. Number two, take at least 10 sales. Take the last 10 sales that you made and try to discover the following. How was the sale completed? In other words, what went into the decision-making process? Who actually pulled the trigger? In other words, the lower down the scale you are, the more price matters. If you're in a hotel trying to sell a meeting to a corporation, the meeting planner is going to be much more price-oriented and comparison-oriented than the CEO who has the responsibility for the outcome of the meeting. $20 a night may be an obstacle for the meeting planner, but it's nothing to the CEO who wants his people to be happy, well-rested, productive for the real purpose of the meeting. Which brings me to my next point. Number three, don't focus on the sale. Focus on the lifetime use or the value of the product or the service. Get your probable purchaser to visualize what life will be like after they take ownership. If you can concentrate on use and ownership, then you can focus on cost and long-term value as opposed to price. The key is that the customer must visualize this at the time when they're focusing on how much is this. Let me make one more side note here. Sometimes the price is precluded by somebody who says to you, "We've spent our whole budget." That person is not the decision maker. He or she is a budget spender. And the entire time they're spending their budget, they're predominantly focused on price and preserving more of their budget. My goal, when I'm in a sales situation, is to somehow get to the person that makes the budget. The person that makes the budget can add a zero and make another budget. Let's go back to the process. What I'm saying here is, number four, start your sales call at a higher level. The higher up the corporate ladder you can get, the less price matters. The higher the officer in the company, the more they're able to see the big picture of profit and productivity as opposed to price. Here's the acid test to see if you're talking to the right person. When somebody starts to hammer you for price, you simply say, "Price or profit, Mr. Jones, which would you rather have? Price lasts for a moment, Mr. Jones. Profit lasts for a lifetime." All executive corporate officers are interested in making a profit. Here's the problem. What I've just challenged you to do will double your workload as a salesperson. You now have to get into the sale with productivity ideas and profit ideas. The good news is that not only will your workload double, your sales will double along with it. The better news is that most salespeople will not do the hard work that it takes to make selling easy. There's not much competition at the top of the sales ladder. But the best news is that you will be in control of your own outcomes.
"But Jeffrey, you don't understand. All my sales are three bids and the customer takes the lowest bid."
No, Sparky, you don't understand. You're not using any imagination to try to change the terms of the proposal. Why don't you recommend to your customer, "You know, Mr. Jones, all three of the prices that you're going to receive are going to be within 10% of one another. Why don't we state in the contract or the RFP that if all prices are within 10%, that you're free to choose the product or the service that you believe will help your company the most, or the company will have the most confidence in performing after the sale." Fair enough. Or why don't you say, "Mr. Jones, all of us salespeople are going to make claims about how great we are. I recommend that you add to each proposal that each of us, potential vendors, supply you with video testimonials from other customers proving that everything that we say is true." Now, I've just given you two ideas on how to change lowest price proposals, but you can use these same ideas if no bidding is involved. Take a look for a moment at your scurrilous rat dog competition that comes in at the last second and tries to lower the price to steal business. First, understand that if you know it's coming or has the potential of coming, you can discuss it with your potential customer. You can ward this off from occurring by agreeing with the customer that it won't occur and also agreeing on why it won't occur. Most of that kind of stuff occurs after the delivery of the product or the service has taken place. People that come in and try to steal it away. and they're stealing it from people who buy price and have no vision. They're not looking beyond the moment of the purchase. Your job is to make certain that the customer has a clear view of how they will profit after the sale has taken place, how they will produce after the sale has taken place. And that the profit is greater than their desire to buy a lower price. Let me give you the sales and marketing philosophy of Jeffrey Gittimer. I put myself in front of people who can say yes to me, and I deliver value first. Red Bite. Give value first, don't add it. I've never understood the philosophy of value added or value add, and I'm willing to make a bet that you don't even know the definition of it. Typically, it's a bunch of baloney from your company for a few minor services or other trifles that your competitor could easily duplicate. It does nothing to set you apart or increase the probability of a sale. My sales philosophy is different. It's called value first. Simply put, I put value in the hands of my potential customer before I ever ask them to buy anything. If you read my column in the paper, if you get my weekly email magazine, Sales Caffeine, if you visit my website, you're going to find tons of ideas and valuable sales information that I give away every week for free. Now, I've only been doing it for 15 years, so I don't know if it's going to work yet, but so far it's earned me millions of dollars. First, I give it away, then I reap the rewards. I don't have much of a brochure. I do almost no advertising, and I make no sales call. Pretty ass backwards for a sales organization, wouldn't you say? It defies every rule of law of marketing, and you'll never find it in a textbook, except for one minor little item. It works. Find something that your customer considers valuable and give it away. It only needs to be information that will help him or her build their business or produce more or earn more so that you can earn yours. But here's a word of caution. My method of selling, or should I say getting the customer to buy, takes hard work. Most salespeople are not willing to do the hard work that it takes to make selling easy. Red Bite. Make friends before you start or don't start. When I meet a prospect on a sales call, the first thing I do is establish some kind of rapport that includes finding some common ground. I laugh with them. I talk to them about them. I establish some credibility with them. And then I begin my sales presentation. I would rather walk out of a sales presentation from a prospect who says, "Let's get right down to business." Because what he's really saying is, "Let's get what right down to how much is it?" I don't win sales on price. I win sales on friendship and relationship. I give the price sales to somebody else. They're the biggest pain in the ass on the planet, and so are the people that are associated with them. Red Bite. Act professionally, talk friendly. Too many salespeople think they have to be professional in order to gain buyer credibility, and nothing could be further from the truth. Me? I'm friendly. Oh, I try to act as professionally as I can, but I always err on the side of being too friendly. The stiff sales professional will give a bid or proposal, and if it ain't the lowest, he walks away with a goose egg. Me? I'm the friendliest and the highest. I wonder if there's any correlation there. Now, I'm not saying be the highest price, although it seems to be working for companies like BMW and Mercedes, but I am saying be the friendliest. Red Bite. Sales for the moment, friends for life. Sales for the commission, value for the fortune. Early on in my writing career, I created a quote. If you make a sale, you can earn a commission. If you make a friend, you can earn a fortune. This philosophy is rarely used in sales. Those who employ it are the top performers and the top paid salespeople. They build relationships. They don't worry about their quotas. They concentrate on the value they provide to their customers and the corresponding orders that accompany it. I challenge you that this is the single hardest lesson to learn and at the same time, the single most powerful and most financially rewarding lesson that I can teach. It's the essence of my philosophy. It's the core of my business. And it's the heart of my success. Make it yours and earn a fortune. All things being equal, people want to do business with their friends. All things being not quite so equal, people still want to do business with their friends. Principle 5 is not work, it's network. In this principle, I'm going to tell you the 21.5 best places to network. And in the Red Bites, you're going to hear about get face-to-face first. Networking eliminates cold calling, and networking leads to referrals. Here for your enjoyment are the 21.5 best places to network and the secrets behind being successful at it. How important is networking? It's real important. What can networking do for your relationships? Build them. What can networking do for your sales? Make them. What can networking do for your success? The right contacts and the right connections can make or break it. If you're trying to be successful, it's the difference between mediocre and big. Well, if networking's so important, why aren't you out there doing more of it? Let me give you the big 4 reasons. Number 1, you think it takes too much time and you're unwilling to dedicate the time. Number 2, you have that they don't pay me enough money to do this attitude and you're doomed to negativity and its brother, mediocrity. 3, you think cold calling is a great way to prospect. 4, you want to, but you just don't know how or where. Well, if you're number four, I can help you. And this information is vital to making a successful networking plan. If you're somewhere between 1 and 3, this information is not for you. But don't worry, you already know everything anyway, so this would just be a review. Networking is life skills and social skills combined with sales skills. It's business leisure, conducted before and after work, as opposed to business frantic, which is conducted from 9 to 5, the exception being lunch. Networking is a mandatory function of business for salespeople and entrepreneurs. But everyone in every segment of commerce and career networks. Great scientists, electrical engineers, surgeons, they all have their annual meeting of some kind where they get together and talk shop. Giant trade shows attract buyers and sellers from all over the world. What are the principles of networking? Get known by those who count. Get more prospects. Make more contacts. Make more sales. Build relationships. Make career advancements or just get a job sometimes. And build your reputation. Be seen and known as a consistent, be there person. What do you need to be a successful networker? A great 30-second commercial that engages and asks questions that qualify a prospect and gets to the next step in the sales cycle if there's an interest. It's your willingness to dedicate the time that it takes to be excellent at it and a plan of where and when. To maximize your networking effectiveness, you have to follow one simple rule. It's rule A1A. Go where your customers and prospects go or are likely to go. The 21.5 best places to network are number 1.